Okay. As you've been told, my name is Fletcher Njororai. He was asking me how to pronounce the second name, and I told him we don't pronounce the N, so it's Njororai. That's how we do it in our cultural language.
Did I get it right?
You did.
Thank you.
Okay. Just to introduce you to the work that I do, I'm working with the Burundian refugees in Knoxville. This is the first group to arrive in the U.S., and they came in 2006. Having spent their entire life in Tanzanian refugee camps. Some literature will call it the 1972 Burundians, because that is when we had the first severe genocide in Burundi, and they relocated to Tanzania, and therefore they were almost like a stateless population. They still identify with Burundi, but they have almost no property in Burundi, and the only thing they have about Burundi is the memories and the language. From 2007, overall, we have about 8,000 Burundians who have come to the U.S. In Knoxville, the population we've been working with, initially there were just about 39 families with about 250 people in total, including the children. But because of secondary immigration, which involves maybe families relocating to meet with their own family, the numbers have gone up. We are in the process of taking some statistics currently to establish what the numbers are, but there could be maybe around 350 to 400 Burundians in Knoxville, which is a small rural town compared to other places which have been gateways for resettlement of refugees in the U.S. They're usually big towns like Atlanta, Dallas. They have more resources and they're more prepared for people coming in, and like Knoxville, which is a smaller city with very few resources and hardly prepared to take in the number of refugees who are coming, not just the Burundians, but all other refugees from other places. So it in itself presents a problem when refugees come to a place that has not been used to receiving refugees, not just immigrants. And the Burundians who arrived here have, as we said, lived primarily in the camps. They have had very little exposure to schooling, and therefore their education is very low, if at all they have any. Therefore, they are not only illiterate in their national language, Kirundi, but they hardly can speak English. That presents them as a very unique group, because for most refugees who come in, the materials for orientation are either in English or in their language, and because they can't speak any of the languages, the resettlement agency has to be very creative in how they can deal with the Burundians. Then, program in which we work with at the University of Tennessee, working with the Burundians to assess their health disparities, is known as Health Transitions. It is a community-based participatory research approach, because these are not just for you walk in and interview. You've got to work with them. They have got to know you. They have to establish trust with you, and they have to know how much they can explain to you. And for you to reach there, you've got to engage them. So this is usually considered the most appropriate ways of working with refugees, especially people who have been so traumatized. Most of these people have also, like we said, been very close to themselves, and it takes time for them to open up. In the health transitions, we also have a service learning component. We work with students who help us to do work with the refugees, including education. The framework within which my study is conducted is social capital. A social capital has lots of definitions in different disciplines, and the way it's defined in a way impacts how it's applied in that discipline. In the health professions, it is where we also have some of the most significant impacts that can be demonstrated empirically that it's actually very significant in impacting health. I took the approach of networks, which talks about bridging social capital, bonding, linking. It talks about reciprocity, trust, norms, and values. Social capital is considered very significant because it's one of the resources that is easily accessible to almost everybody, not just the immigrants, but much more so very significant for refugees who come in and almost know nobody, and therefore they have to relate to themselves primarily before they can relate to other people. Therefore, compared to financial capital and human capital, that's about education and skills, social capital is the most readily available resource refugees can have before they develop other resources. It's considered a solution to problems, but it can be a problem in itself, because when people stay to themselves, then it's very difficult for them to understand the host community and even the resources available to them. So we can't say that social capital is a panacea to problems. What do we mean by bonding capital? I mean social capital. That means the horizontal ties that are established between people because of some shared values like identity. They came from the same place, speak the same language, or stay in the same neighborhood or in the same class. This is usually horizontal, and this is the most strongest type of ties that they can have. Bridging and social capital are the ties they establish with other people they know in the neighborhood who are not necessarily their own in ethnic groups, and also maybe work acquaintances. Linking social capital is usually a vertical type of relationship with people across power. For example, the people within institutions, the health systems, education system, people within authority who can help them to know much more about the U.S. and even advocate for them. When we talk about social capital, like I have said, it has a lot of things and is documented to increase health, to improve mental health, integration, and all that I have listed there. But again, it has a negative impact. It has made people to be excluded and isolated and aggravates poverty. It can also increase crime because they are very strong and loyal to their group. So it just depends on which angle. However, both co-ethnic and across-ethnic networks are important. Our methodology, as I have already said, it deals with the community. We used focus groups, which were 6-2 for women and 4 for men. This was between November 2008 and July 2009. Then later, a community forum was organized. The first group were 39 people, but in the community forum, anybody who wanted to come was welcome. And this was to help us establish the facts that we had collected from the people who participated in the focus groups, and also to clarify concepts that are not very clear. This data was analyzed by Atlas TI, which is a software for qualitative data. Basically, we were doing a thematic data analysis. Among the findings, the Burundians are preoccupied with family reunification. Even though they're in the US and there are plenty of good things, their memories are still about going back to Africa where they left people in the refugee camps who are suffering. They keep saying, what does it matter that I'm in the US and I left my family in the camps? And most of them actually tell us that they told us they're going to bring these people. It's almost 5 years down the line. Why can't they bring them? Because those are people who didn't pass the screening test. Then they were also given misinformation. They were told almost everything is good. They're going to get free housing for 5 years, free health care. They're going to have their children educated. Almost everything is good. When they reached here, that was hardly close to the truth. And they're suffering, and they say it was better in Africa than it is here, because people are very individualistic. So they say they have inadequate information, but they were misinformed, and they can hardly see any one of the people who spoke to them. These were UN representatives. This has given them a lot of disillusionment. They are very stressed. We have a lot of depression amongst them. We have language barrier. They also are suffering cultural shock, and they feel they're stigmatized to be called refugees. Therefore, that impacts on even how they can relate with other people. We have a lot of family upheavals, because here the men have to help take care of children, while in Africa it's the women who are taking care. Everybody has to go to work, including children, to bring in something. We have a lot of fights going on. And even in Africa, you could discipline your children. But here, the few who have tried to discipline their children, they have had their children taken away by them, children protection services. And they can't understand why, because no one has educated them about not beating your children. When they call the 911, the parents don't understand. And they have a mistrust with the entire U.S. system, because they think they were lied to. So they don't even have the confidence to go and ask anybody for help. Now, among themselves, they also have problems, because we have the Tutsis and the Hutus. So they have also not established bonds among themselves. They have faced a lot of structural challenges, like I talked about, the language, which is very key for them to talk to anybody about their needs and their situation. They lack credentials compared to other refugees, for example, who come from Iraq and Iran and Pakistan, people who are doctors, lawyers. These people do not have even the basic skills to survive in this country. Therefore, you can imagine the kind of jobs they have to do. And it's a question of either going to school and then trying to get an education versus trying to take care of your family in the immediate needs. So where does the time go? The policy requires them to be as independent as possible the soonest they can. What time do they go to school? Who takes care of their children? Who pays their rent? The aged people, when they were coming in Africa, you age in your household, and therefore the children take care of you. But when they were coming here, for them to be accepted, they lied their ages. Some of them said they were 45 when they were 60. Some said they were 60 when they were 70. Now reaching here, they can't get the benefits for the elderly people. Yet they can't go to work. They can't speak English. They can't go to class. These people are suffering. They are developing and problems and aging really faster than even in the slums. Than even in the camps. Then we have indiscriminate policies that do not tell who a refugee is in terms of where they came from. These people who did not come in with any resources compared to people who come in with money and credentials are just completely at a loss. This is a totally indiscriminate situation. Now, over 18-year-olds cannot live in the family, while in Africa, you stay with your family for as long as you want. So when the children leave their parents, these parents don't know what to do. And then they also complain of the neighborhoods they live in. They're very isolated because they're usually taken in very cheap neighborhoods. While in Africa, life is social. They feel very isolated. I'll not go through all those, but I just want to talk about the unequal treatment. They feel that even though they're refugees, compared to other refugees, because of their being unable to work or not coming in with any resources, they're really discriminated. They're lowest on the ladder. Their problems may be much more surmounting. Then because they cannot even read and write, they can't get driver's licenses, so they can't even drive themselves to work. They don't have translators. One of the reasons is because they're among the first people to come in, so the system was not prepared for them. So even for them to read road signs, if at all somebody can help them to get a driver's license, it's a problem. And then most of them feel they were abandoned very fast because they were told the help would be for 5 years, but they were only helped for 3 years. The thing that I'll talk about here is the anxiety about their children. They're saying that in Africa you take care of your children until they're able to take care of themselves. Now here they're raising children in a system which they themselves don't understand. The children can adapt very quickly, they speak English, they can eat their food here. The parents are still in between, not understanding the system. So they don't know how to raise these children. Therefore, they are really anxious about the kind of a system they're going to leave their children in. They are even scared that these children may go into crime. Now, we found out that bonding social capital was lacking. Like I have already said, they don't trust the system. They don't trust themselves. And within families, we found that people can only help one another, but not other refugee families. And then, like we have already said, the children who leave the families at 18 years quickly start living independently, which is an African. So the bonding social capital at that time was not there. A breaching social capital, like we have already said, is not there. The people who brought them in, the relocation services, the host community have not been very open. So they hardly know anyone. They're still just to themselves. Their children are discriminated at school for lack of English. And one way of refugees resettling is when they can get into parent-teacher associations. It helps them to know the community, to establish self-efficacy, and to actually adapt, which has not happened with this group. Linking social capital was almost totally lacking. Like we said, they can no longer trust the U.S. people who talk to them. Resettlement agencies hardly take them in, and they do not have resources. They lack sponsors. In conclusion, we feel that this is one of the groups that is really going to be really hard hit because they're among the first, and the system, the entire U.S. system, has not taken into consideration their unique problems. We feel they're also likely to face depression, and their quality of life may even be worse than it was in the camps where the UN provided for their needs. Some of the recommendations is that the ways and strategies of resettling these people should explore how to create social capital in all the three categories to help these people to have community, have capacity, and empower them to live in this country. And among the future research is to have some longitudinal studies they arrive in 2006, it would be important to know where they are currently and maybe a few years from now, and how those changes have taken place, whether for the good or for bad, and to help also establish policies that can help some unique groups like this. And then also to find out some of the negative outcomes that maybe as an impact, maybe because of bringing them in when the system was not ready. Thank you.